Thank you very much. What a joy to be back here again. It was 6 years ago that I really kind of had my coming out party. And I had gotten to know Bruce Grayson and had given a talk at the Division of Perceptual Studies. And that, of course, was very scientific, all about the science of consciousness. Because that's really what this is truly all about, is the mind-body question, which has been going on in philosophical and scientific circles for more than 2,400 years, at least since the time of Plato and Aristotle, the relationship of mind and brain. And as a neurosurgeon, spending my training years at Duke and then 15 years teaching at Harvard Medical School, I thought I had some idea of how brain, mind, and consciousness work. Now, admittedly, if somebody pressed hard, you know, about mechanisms of conscious awareness, I would admit that we really didn't quite know yet. And the assumption was that by simply studying it more, studying the brain, that we would someday discover that. But all of that shifted back in November of 2008. At that time, I would say, I pretty much bought into the neuroscientific party line that the brain creates consciousness, and the other assumption of a lot of modern science, that the physical world is all that exists. So obviously, if that's the case, you have to somehow compress something as incredibly robust as consciousness into this little 3-pound gelatinous mass sitting in a warm, dark bath inside of our skull. And, you know, I believed in that kind of promissory materialism, as it's called, that if we someday study the brain enough, we'll come to understand the mechanism of consciousness. But what I've come to realize through my journey that happened in November 2008, and also come to realize in the 8.5 years since then, that the entire modern scientific, philosophical, theological world and our culture at large is coming to recognize, is that materialist model of brain creates consciousness is completely, absolutely false. And in fact, the best seeds for thinking that it was a false notion of reality began a century ago with the advent of quantum physics. And of course, you often hear people discussing quantum physics in this kind of context. And a little later, I'll get into why the measurement paradox in quantum physics, the kind of deep mystery in quantum physics, is actually right at the intersection of the mind-body question. And that's why it has been so difficult. Because in fact, an answer that starts to present itself from NDEs and other spiritually transformative experiences is to literally believe what the founding fathers of quantum physics were trying to tell us about the fundamental role of consciousness in the creation of reality. And this is something that I'll be covering in this morning's talk, and it is also something that is the absolute subject and matter of a new book, my third book, which is entitled Living in a Mindful Universe, co-authored with my partner Karen Newell, sitting up front here. But it really is about that much bigger look at it, because this is not a question of whether or not you believe, you know, that the afterlife is real or believe in reincarnation. It's about the empirical data. It's about human experience. And it's about following the chain of that experience to some logical conclusions in making sense of the world. And it turns out that even though the mind-body question has been circling as probably one of the most profound questions in all of human thought for more than 100 generations of humans, I would say that it's only now that we're actually beginning to put it together in a way that makes sense. Now, admittedly, there are certain aspects of spiritual traditions, both Eastern and Western, that have been right on target with this understanding for thousands of years. And of course, then you have the rise of scientific materialism and the scientific revolution over the last 4 centuries or so. And I think it's important to point out that when that revolution started, and you had people like Galileo and Francis Bacon and Sir Isaac Newton trying to figure out how this natural world works, and they saw themselves as observers of that world. At that time, if they wandered too much into the land of consciousness, mind, that kind of territory, they were walking on the hallowed ground of the church, and they were likely to be burned at the stake. I think that was burned into their DNA. So in these centuries of studying the natural world, they were so focused on being the observers of that and the material world as being all that exists, that they lost sight of reality. And the reality is that no human being has ever experienced anything other than the inside of their own consciousness. And as much as we are tempted to believe that there is this incredible world out there, I see all these beautiful souls in this room, all the trees outside, the beautiful Rocky Mountains, the stars in the sky at night, and I witness all that as being out there, it's crucial to point out you've never experienced anything other than an internal model that we assume represents a world that is out there. Consciousness is a really big thing. I would, in fact, say consciousness is the only thing that actually exists. And then we have to start making more sense of it. But the reason this is important is because it gets right to that mind-body question. And, of course, that has tremendous relevance if you start wondering about things like, what happens when I die? I wonder. Well, I think there are a lot of people in this room who have a pretty good idea of exactly what happens when we die. And it's not exactly what I might have been taught in my Methodist church growing up in North Carolina. But really, this is about the quantum physics. It's about the nature of reality. It's about the deepest aspects of that mind-body relationship. And so what I'd like to do is kind of help take you along a journey of my own personal path of discovery. Also why, for example, Karen and I are here and sharing workshops in going within, workshops in using differential frequency sound for meditation. And that is through her work as the co-founder of a group called Sacred Acoustics, which provides very powerful tools for going within. And of course, this is a very natural audience for that kind of thing, because in fact, it's a beautiful way to open up that relationship to universal mind, to that infinite loving force, and not have to depend on an NDE or some life-threatening illness to get there. Because as conscious beings, each and every one of us has the power to fully understand what's going to happen when we leave our physical body, when we die. We can come to those answers by going within. And that's why meditation is such a crucial part of this. And I'm sure there are many people in this room who fully acknowledge that. So this message is really for the live streaming crowd out there who might not be quite as into this. But the answers truly lie within us all. And that is something I never would have said 10 years ago. So let me take you back a little bit to who I was before. Neurosurgeon, teaching other neurosurgeons, thinking I understood brain, mind, and consciousness. And then at 4:30 in the morning on November 10th, 2008, I was awakened by a severe jolt of pain in my back and soon realized I had a tremendous headache and was literally driven to seizures and coma within about 3.5 hours from symptom onset. And of course, I told the full story that is also revealed in the book Proof of Heaven 6 years ago and have shared some follow-up to that. But for those who may not be aware of that story, I just want to hit some of the high points and why they're important for this discussion about the mind, brain, the nature of consciousness, and in fact, therefore, the nature of all reality. So I was taken to the hospital. I was already deep in coma, and the doctor who received me there didn't even recognize me, even though we were close friends. But she was smart enough to do a lumbar puncture, realized I had a gram-negative bacterial meningitis, that's about the worst kind you can have, and given the fact that I'd gone into coma within 3.5 hours with that diagnosis, she knew at that time that I had about a 10% chance of survival. That was the rosy prognosis Monday morning when I was first taken into the ER. They put me on a ventilator on 3 very powerful antibiotics, and then up into ICU bed 10. The next morning, they got a shocker from microbiology reporting back that it was E. coli. If you do a medical literature search on E. coli meningitis in adults, somewhere less than 1 in 10 million per year, it's very rare. Almost always, E. coli meningitis occurs in newborns. Okay, I have to defend my level of maturity, but that's my problem. Turns out that through the week, things were not improving at all. So by day 7, it was a Sunday morning, they held a family conference and said it was really, I was down to about a 2% chance of survival. No chance of recovery, and therefore the advice was to stop the antibiotics and let nature take its course. Now, it was a few hours later that I started coming back to this world. And in coming back to this world, all of my memories for the life of Evan Alexander, words, language, all my personal memories, all of that knowledge of science, and all my religious beliefs, everything had been completely deleted within coma. Now, in the early weeks and months of recovery, I thought, well, that made sense because I thought all that stuff lived in the neocortex. My doctors kept pointing out to me I could not have had any kind of experience because my neocortex was too damaged. And modern neuroscience would posit that any kind of details of conscious awareness occur in the neocortex. It's the most powerful calculator in the brain. It's the part that really makes us all human. All the details of our conscious awareness of everything we see and hear and think, all of our language, all of our perception of our body relative to everything else around us, every bit of that demands, according to modern neuroscience, it's that the neocortex be functioning at some level, at least various parts of it. That's what's so beautiful about a severe case of gram-negative bacterial meningitis. It's a perfect experimental prep for human death. The only problem is almost no one returns to tell the tale. And that's what my doctors were reflecting that morning when they recommended stopping the antibiotics. And so when I did come back in that ICU bed and I was coming back to consciousness, I had no memories of my life before. In fact, my mother, my sisters, my son standing at the bedside, I had no idea who these beings were. All I knew was where I had been on an extraordinary odyssey that seemed to last for months or years. I mean, time obviously has no significance in those realms, but a very extensive journey of learning and clarity and understanding in realms far more real than this one. As NDEers will tell you, this world is a shadow world, kind of a dreamy little, kind of murky world. That world is sharp, crisp, real. The ways of knowing far transcend our very meager little bandwidth of the apparent here and now, living in the Maya, living in the illusion of this existence in the material world. And that's because consciousness is not created by the brain. And that is one of the most fundamental, obvious conclusions from all this. And it really gets down to a point that we'll cover very well in that book, Living in a Mindful Universe, and there are cards lying around on the bookstore and elsewhere about that. And I would urge people, if you're at all interested, to go on and pre-order that book before it comes out in October of 17, because we're hoping this helps to put the package together for the scientifically minded, for the spiritually minded. It's a very ambitious book to try and join the forces of science and spirituality, because from my point of view, neither science nor spirituality can really move forward without the other. This is really about a unification. And this is why we've been so long, more than 100 generations of humans, to try and get to this point. But the thing that's actually providing the energy to now push us to the next level really has to do with those findings in quantum physics and more refined experiments that keep proving that what the founding fathers of quantum physics told us, that consciousness seems to be fundamental, whether it be from Werner Heisenberg or Paul Dirac, Louis de Broglie, Wigner, von Neumann, all of them kept saying consciousness is fundamental. And yet the scientific community has been very slow to pick up on what that really means. But it has to do with that whole spectrum of the mind-body question. And materialism, you know, brain creates consciousness is at one end. But I can tell you that the truly open-minded skeptic, looking at all the possibilities of that mind-body relationship from pure materialism where the physical exists and the brain creates consciousness through all the forms of dualism where there's some kind of parallel relationship between brain and mind, but neither one is fully reducible to the other, until you get all the way to the far end of that spectrum, a position in philosophy known as metaphysical or ontological idealism. And that is where I believe one actually has to go to actually start to make sense of this. But that position is that all of the universe, every bit of this universe, all that exists, exists within consciousness. That the entire physical realm is merely a projection. And it's a very important and tremendously liberating viewpoint for humans. Now, reverting to that materialist view that I talked about, that I subscribed to before my coma, brain creates consciousness, one of the obvious correlates of that is human beings have no free will at all. And the reason for that is if you believe that the brain is creating consciousness, the only thing that's going on are chemical reactions. Physics, chemistry, biology, all of those laws being followed by the molecules in your brain, and it's simply a chemical reaction. That free will and consciousness themselves are complete illusions of those chemical reactions. So they would scoff at any notion that we have any kind of free will or control over our destiny. But what my journey showed me very clearly is the exact opposite is the case. When consciousness is fundamental, when we are all part of one mind, as I believe we are, that we're all connected to the divine, which I think many NDEers can tell you from personal experience is absolutely crystal clear as the only way to make sense of this, then things start to make far more sense. And not only that, then we are in charge of our destiny. And this is where NDEers help this world tremendously, because there's a revolution in understanding now in the nature of consciousness and the relationship of brain and mind in the scientific community. And the tip of the spear that is initiating and energizing this tremendous shift in understanding of that mind-body relationship is the NDE community. I would say all of our religious beliefs and thinking over millennia have come from people who have had those kinds of experiences. That was the origin of it. Of course, the prophets always bring back a message of love, of oneness, of mercy, compassion, forgiveness. Whether you're talking about Buddha, Christ, Muhammad, they all brought a similar message. And it's only when other human beings start to take control of that message and control other humans. And I think Mark Anthony did a beautiful job yesterday of describing how that occurred in the 2nd and 3rd century AD. It's really shocking what people today believe or take as kind of the orthodoxy, when in fact the message of the prophets was one of oneness and one of love. Love without conditions. And this is something that I think NDEers can relate to beautifully, because they touched it, they felt it, they bathed in it. But the reality is, we are all death experiencers. We've been here many times before, and will be here many times to come. There's no way to make sense of this without acknowledging that reincarnation is part of the package. And that's why I think that work done by Ian Stevenson that Mark mentioned yesterday morning, the Division of Perceptual Studies, now being carried on by Jim Tucker, where they had more than 2,500 cases of past life memories in children, where the most ready explanation is of reincarnation. And to me, on my journey, that was crystal clear from the time spent in that core realm, that reincarnation was the only way to make sense of it, the only way to make sense of an infinitely loving, infinitely compassionate, and infinitely knowing and powerful deity at the source of all that is, especially in the setting of the suffering of innocents like children and animals. I could not imagine the one incarnation model made any sense. But of course, in my core journey, I saw very clearly that we come back again and again. It's very important. And it's not some mindless cycle of suffering, from my point of view. And I think most NDEers would agree that that particular interpretation, some people might invoke their understanding of Buddhism to say that that's what this cycle of reincarnation is all about. From my point of view, it's very different. And the NDE world brings that to the fore, that our lives have tremendous meaning and purpose, that every bit of this existence is about learning those lessons. We're all here to learn, to teach, to grow. It's the evolution of consciousness. As I like to say, kind of along the lines of Teilhard de Chardin in his beautiful book, The Paradigm of Man, back in the mid-20th century. And it was really about a purposeful evolution. You know, the general interpretation of Darwinian evolution is that it's a kind of a chaotic, random mechanism. Whereas, in fact, I tend to agree much more with Teilhard de Chardin's take on it, where this is an evolution, that we're all participants Because in fact, the self-aware universe is evolving, learning, growing. But it's through all, just like that old saying that all politics is local. Well, all of evolution of consciousness is occurring in sentient beings that are here learning and teaching these beautiful lessons. And the lesson that humanity in this world has been faced with for the last few thousand years is a lesson of love and oneness. And for those who think we've learned that lesson, I think all you have to do is look at the headlines. And we haven't quite assimilated it completely yet. Even though in this room, I would say that lesson is probably quite well accepted and lived by many. But that's the role I see of the NDE community, is to take that message out to this world. And the world is shifting rapidly. Now, in my own personal transformation, that came in the form of my memories deep in that coma. And that all started in a very primitive, coarse, unresponsive realm. Very murky, like being in dirty jello. I have a strong sense of memory of roots or blood vessels all around me. And even though I had no memory of time passage, so it seemed to be an eternity that I was there. And again, important to point out that in that realm, I had absolutely no memories whatsoever of anything about this universe. All language was gone, no words at all. My personal memories, any knowledge of Earth, living in this universe, were gone. And I think that tabula rasa, that empty slate, was very crucial. I think that was a critical part of my own journey. Now, those who study NDEs realize well that although NDEs always seem to have a personal element that's tied for that soul, the deeper realities, they all have some common features and grounds that go back thousands of years. These are not culturally inspired. They're independent of your religious belief systems. The revelations, even though we might default to our religious beliefs in an attempt to explain them, often the content of the journey radically shifts those religious beliefs. I mean, I can promise you, in that Methodist church in North Carolina, I was not being taught about mysticism going within, and not being taught about reincarnation, not being taught about oneness with God, because in fact, I've come to see that our very spark of conscious awareness is an absolutely direct linkage and manifestation of that infinitely powerful, all-healing deity. But in this world, if you start talking about becoming one with God, some doctor might try and up your medication. And that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about something much grander than that. And this, of course, is something that comes to recognize that the voice in my head and my ego is not who I am. And this is not what we're talking about in meditation, of going in and kind of thinking things through and trying to philosophically work our way through logic and rational thinking to some kind of conclusion. It's actually much deeper than that. And it's about pure experience. And part of that pure experience, and this is something that Karen and I will go into in our workshop this afternoon and tomorrow, is coming to see that the deep mystery in the modern scientific world, the deepest two mysteries, I would say, that challenge our thinking. One of them is something known as the hard problem of consciousness, which was first defined in the mid-1990s, although the thinking about it had been going on for decades. And it's really the impossible problem of trying to somehow explain phenomenal conscious experience based on the physical workings of and substance of the brain. And that's never gone anywhere. Conventional neuroscientists will tell you the brain creates consciousness. And if you then say, oh, really? Tell me more. They won't say anything. There really is nothing to follow. It's shocking. In fact, I think from the perspective of a true, open-minded skeptic, looking at that spectrum of possibilities of the mind-brain relationships, from pure materialism, brain creates consciousness, all the way over to metaphysical idealism, that notion that consciousness is fundamental, that the truly open-minded skeptic, first and foremost, would throw materialism out the window is absolutely ridiculous. And it is. It's not the way the world works. The brain is not the producer of consciousness at all. We're conscious in spite of our brain. You're in prison right now. Shackles of the physical brain. And the illusion of the here and now. Every bit of that is a beautiful construct. And it's here for a reason. We come into these lives planning so that the difficulties, the hardships, illness, injury, are actually part of our growth. They are the engines that drive the ascendance of our soul. And it's how we relate to those challenges and hardships, how we come to recover love for ourselves. Because in fact, I would say the vast majority of the world's problems are caused because we don't love ourselves enough. I grew up kind of thinking the tough part was loving my neighbor, loving my enemy. Well, in fact, loving myself was the first step. And of course, those who have read Proof of Heaven or have heard me talk before realize I was adopted. And so for me, that's how I kind of focused my interest on that question of, was I worthy of love? I had been left behind by my mother when I was 11 days old. And even though my father, who was a neurosurgeon, assured me when I was young that I couldn't possibly have any memory of the events around my birth and my birth mother leaving me behind, I came to realize in my life that he was wrong. He was a very smart man. He knew a lot of things. He was a neurosurgeon, a world leader, but he really didn't understand that my life had been tremendously affected by that presumed rejection, being left behind. Now, the thing is, that's just one little story, but we all have similar stories. And this notion of being separated and not being worthy is something that is very commonly drilled in many cultures around this world. And it was something I wrestled with all over that kind of adoption issue. Even though my adoptive family was beautiful and loving in every way, I could not have asked for more. I could not have been more blessed. But for me, that was a huge part of the struggle. And of course, that's something that I discussed in Proof of Heaven. It's something I'm still wrestling with, even though I've come a long way. But first and foremost, coming to realize this revolution in the understanding of consciousness and the one mind and of our identity with that all-loving deity is one that is tremendously refreshing and liberating. And it's recovering the memory of that connection that NDEers get to experience during an NDE, any kind of spiritually transformative experience. And there are many ways to have them. They can be spontaneous. You can have a shared death experience, which, of course, thank God for Dr. Raymond Moody, because not only did he give us that beautiful book, A Life After Life, back in 1975, that really kicked all of this off, but also he wrote a beautiful book, Glimpses of Eternity, that came out just a few years ago, which is all about shared death experiences. And, of course, shared death are just like near-death experiences, but they happen in bystanders and loved ones who may be at the bedside, they may be 3,000 miles away, but they participate in the transition of a soul leaving this world, going on to the next one. And so shared death, of course, is a fascinating notion. It's something that, in fact, people can hear a little more about today, because William Peters will be talking, and he's done some amazing work with shared death and something called the Shared Crossing Initiative. But his mission, and very much the one that Karen and I are on, is teaching people that you can cultivate this. You don't have to be wait until you're smote over the head with a bludgeon or something like that. This is all about something you can cultivate as a conscious being. We can all go within and come to realize that ego, that little voice in my head, is not who I am. And so, in fact, as I was saying a minute ago, the deep mystery facing science about consciousness, the hard problem, is about that observer. It's about that self-awareness. That part is extremely difficult to explain. And it turns out that is also running in parallel with what I would say is another major challenge to modern science and philosophy and understanding the nature of reality, and that is that measurement paradox in quantum physics. And I'm not going to try and go into any of that in detail here and now, but suffice it to say that what the founding fathers, very brilliant men, were trying to tell us, that consciousness is fundamental, they meant. They weren't kidding. And just because the rest of the scientific community and a lot of quantum physicists who know the math and the physics, and of course that's the origin of a third of our modern economy with computers and cell phones, GPS systems, all the microelectronics, every bit of that is built on the success of quantum physics. But there's an advice that's often given to quantum physicists, and that is shut up and calculate. And the reason is you start to actually pay attention to the deeper experiments that give rise to that math and physics. It's very proven, the most proven theory in the history of science. There are some tremendous paradoxes and mysteries that start to emerge. And it's because of their hesitance to admit that consciousness can be fundamental that so much of that kind of mystery and paradox emerges. And that's why I believe that science and spirituality both depend on each other to get to the next level. And that's the revolution that we are in the middle of right now. And that is something that that I think the NDE community is contributing to tremendously. Now, on my own particular journey, it had started that earthworm eye view, that primitive coarse unresponsive realm. But then there came a beautiful spinning white light, pure. Although I remember it had kind of a ground glass appearance and fine silvery and golden tendrils off of it. And it came slowly spinning. And the most beautiful thing about it was the melody. A musical melody. Perfect musical melody. Unlike anything I could ever imagine hearing in this four-dimensional space-time. And in fact, that slowly spinning white light came towards me. And it opened like a rift in the fabric of that ugly earthworm eye view. That where my journey had started. And it led up into this brilliant valley that I call the Gateway Valley that was lush with life, lots of greenery, no signs of any death or decay, blossoms, buds, flowers blooming, everything very dynamically alive. And I was a speck of awareness on a butterfly wing. Millions of butterflies spiraling in vast formations, colors beyond the rainbow. And on this butterfly wing, we would dip down into that, above this meadow that was filled with souls dancing, thousands upon thousands, lots of joy and merriment, dogs jumping and children playing, incredible festivities. And all of this was being fueled because up above, swooping golden orbs of light, leaving sparkling trails of golden dust against a blue-black velvety sky that was illuminated by billowing clouds of pure color. And those swooping orbs in my later writings, weeks after this, when I was reporting it all, and when language has returned, I called them angelic choirs. Yet again, music, vibration. It was the chants, anthems, hymns thundering through me, this incredible, awesome awareness of existence and of oneness, of connection, and all the beauty in this valley and seeing it all is fueled by that love. And I remember that first soft summer breeze blowing through in my awareness on that butterfly wing. And it was awareness of the interconnecting power of that unconditional love of the divine for all that is. There was no separation at all. And yet, those beautiful angelic choirs above provided yet another portal. Music. This is why the work that I do with Karen, the sacred acoustics. We've used music for tens of thousands of years, various chants, hymns, anthems, what have you, the acoustics of sacred chambers, cathedrals built their acoustical properties, all to use music, vibration, and frequency to help us reach transcendental states of conscious awareness. Music has always been the guide. It's what allows a portal from this realm to the next, and it also allows for our traversal of spiritual realms. Now, in that particular journey on that beautiful Gateway Valley, as those who have heard me talk before and have read Proof of Heaven will realize, the best part about it was I wasn't alone. There was a beautiful girl. Sparkling blue eyes, high forehead, broad smile and cheekbones, soft brown hair, and she looked at me with this infinitely loving smile. Pure compassion and love without any conditions at all. And gave me what I believe is the central message of my own life journey, which I believe is the reason I came back to this world, was to share her message, which, of course, is a very simple and ancient message. You are deeply loved and cherished forever. You have nothing to fear. You will be taken care of. And of course, the other thing, as I put it in Proof of Heaven, that she said at that time was, you can do no wrong. That part's been a little twisted by people who, I don't think I explained it very well in Proof of Heaven, but I knew by that time that this is soul school, that all is well. All is always well. It's never been anything but that. And so we have the power to rise above this illusion of the Maya, to realize that we're divinely connected with each other, with the divine, that it's all about healing, becoming more whole. And in fact, I would say that's exactly what this evolution of consciousness that Teilhard de Chardin discussed is all about. And we are all part of that process of becoming more whole as individuals, as soul groups, as ethnic groups. And this is not just about humanity. Consciousness is shared throughout this universe. And it's very important to point out that in some of the emerging discussions around this, you'll see some scientists and philosophers that start moving towards a position called panpsychism. They realize that you cannot explain consciousness from within the physical only. And so what they try and do is modify the materialist model and attach some form of proto-consciousness to every subatomic particle. But that completely misses the point, that this is a much higher degree order. That's probably the biggest mistake of reductive materialist science, is to pretend that if we break the world down into the tiniest particles, the electrons and protons and quarks and all the subatomic particles that make up the fabric of reality, and understand how that works, that we'll understand all of reality. But that is completely missing the point. That's a bottom-up approach that is hopeless and is lost and doesn't lead anywhere useful. Now, the top-down approach is the one that is offered from NDEs, from all manner of spiritually transformative experiences, that certainly is reflected in meditation. And again, getting back to meditation, what this is really about is realizing that the voice in our head, that linguistic brain that is of such power for our communication as a species and also certainly in the scientific and philosophical world, that linguistic brain is not who we are. But the magic, as I pointed out a few minutes ago, whether you're talking about the measurement paradox in quantum physics or the hard problem of consciousness, is the observer. It's the awareness. Each and every one of us is a little eddy of self-awareness of this universe. And we're each performing a role in being here to learn and teach together in this growth of manifesting that love and oneness. And that's where, of course, that materialist science and materialist thinking has been very misleading. Not only that, our very language is misleading. You know, to define is to limit, as Descartes said. Well, those limitations and definitions lead to an idea of separation and this notion in reductive materialist science of breaking everything down to the tiny parts and then believing that somehow understanding the entire universe is going to come from understanding that stage setting. Well, what I often like to point out is that this material world is very much like the facade on a Western movie set, where they're out there filming the cowboys and you got the saloon and everything, but they're just the fronts of buildings. The actual theme and plot of human lives is deeply driven by this soul journey, by this growth that we're all here to share together. And the deepest compass guide for that growth and for those lessons is of love, unconditional love. First and foremost, recovering our connection to the divine, that each and every one of us is divine creature, directly connected to the source of creation in this universe. That is the source of our very conscious awareness. But not only that, we're all interconnected. Not just all of humanity, not just all of life on Earth, but much bigger than that. We are part of a sentient cosmos that is self-aware and growing and learning and getting to the next level. And we've spent far too much time in centuries of conflict and separation and all kinds of divisiveness that's been perpetrated on us by various teachers and leaders, including some who had taken those lessons of the prophets of unification and of oneness and love and converted it through various means to be a tool of control, to control human beings to their own purposes. But I think what's going on now is a true liberation of the one mind, of that one soul spirit, as we're coming to learn, and again, through mainly led through the lessons of NDEs, although there are many other ways to get this kind of knowledge. Many other people have contributed, not just the NDE community, but all kinds of brave and courageous souls who have been through all manner of spiritually transformative experiences, who have come to realize that there is great value in this vision of oneness and connection. Now, for me as a neuroscientist, what I came to see is it was clear that brain was not the creator of mind, but there's a beautiful model in the scientific world that replaces that in a very useful fashion, and that is simply looking at the brain as a reducing valve or filter. An analogy I like to use is like seeing your brain and body in this physical world is like the display on a computer, but it's only the display. So yes, it's important to understand how the display works, and we can use that to kind of explain certain things about reality. But don't think that all the causality that leads to things like illness and injury and recovery from those things, the power of prayer, the incredible power of synchronicities, of things that we might tend to dismiss as, wow, what a coincidence that is, and instead realize this is a little wink and nudge from the universe about our true purpose and about what is really going on here. That there are much more powerful ordering principles that govern this. And I would say they have everything to do with the love of that one mind. One of the biggest lessons of my journey was to realize that God that I encountered in that realm, in not only the earthworm's eye view, but then the angelic choirs provided portals to higher and higher levels. I saw all of space and time collapsing down, four-dimensional space-time of this universe, a tiny little part of what all exists. And then even deep time, an ordering of causality in that spiritual realm that allows for reincarnation and proper ordering so that nothing is left undone in terms of our connectedness with others and the incarnations of loved ones in a shared soul journey of discovery. That's where that deep time comes in handy, because you have to realize that earth time is very much an illusion on this side of the veil. But in that ascendance, going through higher portals above that gateway valley that had many earth-like features, but all of that perfection that I witnessed, and that beautiful girl in the butterfly wing with her comforting message, but all of that collapsing down until I reached the core, infinite, inky blackness, but filled to overflowing with the unconditional love of that creative source for the creation. And the sound of awe. That's what I heard in that realm. And people who had asked me about that in some of my early talks, I even referred to that deity as awe, because when I first came back, my brain was very fragile, and the word God was a puny little human word that didn't begin to describe the power, awe, majesty, and perfection of infinite love that I had witnessed in that core realm. Something that I know many in this room have felt and touched. It resonates with our hearts and forever changes our relationship to all that exists in this universe. Because we are each and every one of us one with this universe. And that binding force is a force of pure, unconditional love. Now, of course, this is nothing new. This has been around for a very, very long time. And thank God, I think our world is finally going to wake up to this. Thanks to the people in this room. Thanks to the people around this world who share their experiences, whether it be a near-death experience or shared death or an after-death communication. They're extremely common, very powerful. There are many other forms of this non-local consciousness that demonstrate that the brain is not the creator of consciousness, but simply like that receiver, like that display screen on the computer. But to understand the workings of this world, you have to probe much deeper. And to do that, you have to go out of this physical world. And the good news is, any one of us, as a conscious, sentient being, has the power to do that by going within. For me, the use of differential sound frequencies, as we'll describe in our workshop, the work of sacred acoustics, work I do with Karen Newell, is one tool. But there are many different ways to go within. The key is realizing that going within is developing your observer self, which I would say in many ways is that higher soul that we connect with in an NDE. And of course, those who know about that higher soul and the feeling of it also realize it's one with the deity, with all else that exists, with that force of love in this universe. But we all have very direct access to that. And so for me, whether I'm using differential sound frequencies or whatever it is to drive my deep conscious awareness, it's always a form of centering prayer. It's always a form of recognizing the voice in my head and my thoughts as being no more than, as Michael Singer put it in his book, The Untethered Soul, an annoying roommate. And you can be gentle with that roommate if they're very insistent, if that little voice keeps chattering away trying to generate a grocery list or a discussion you might have with a boss or something like that. You can gently put that little voice into timeout, because you are far grander than that. And getting in touch with that observer, that higher soul that each of us has access to, gives us tremendous power. And this is power to heal, to become more whole. That's what all of this beautiful journey of life in this universe is about, is trying to become more whole, which is simply recovering, remembering a connection that's very natural. We come into these worlds, and many children can remember past life memories. If you have access to a child under 6, I would highly encourage you to ask them, where were you before you were here? And just be open to the answers that come. So we're all death experiencers. We've been there before, but there is a programmed forgetting. And that programmed forgetting is what kind of separates us from our higher soul for this temporary incarnation. But that's very important. That's why it would be kind of crazy to think that the purpose of this existence is to someday be sitting up there on a cloud playing a harp for all of eternity. That would get pretty dull. This is where the action is. Our souls are chomping at the bit to come in and live these lives, knowing full well that temporarily they have to be dumped down. But that is part of the emotion of having skin in the game, of buying into this, feeling that incredible power of love and connection, but also that sense of loss when a loved one passes over, when we get a terminal diagnosis, when a child commits suicide. These very difficult, challenging parts of life, they are actually what give us the energy to grow. They are what propel us towards ascension, towards oneness with the divine. They're all opportunities for growth and for learning. And that is what is so beautiful about being in a community like this, that is here to share that binding force of love, that togetherness, that knowing that we're all in this as one, that it's not just about humans, that we have tremendous responsibility in terms of our dealing with the world at large, with all the animal and plant life, and taking stewardship of this planet. It's high time we woke up. And this is about overcoming the false boundaries of separation, whether they be from various orthodox religious teachings of we're better than the others, we're the ones who know the truth. Really, the deepest lesson of all the mystical traditions is of oneness, of love, connection, compassion, mercy, and acceptance. And that's what we're all here to learn and share. And I would say that the MVE community, by its very nature, has that built deeply into our DNA. But that is the part that is going to change the world. And it's a lesson that has been a little hard to drill into all of us over time. But I think the evidence, thanks to those who study NDEs and similar expressions of non-local consciousness, the evidence is piling up so strongly that we have to come up with kind of new versions of our understanding of things. For example, my notion of hell that I had before my coma, of thinking of hell as that place of eternal damnation, if you led a life handing out pain and suffering to others, made absolutely no sense. But, in fact, life reviews, which are reported in 30 to 50% of NDEs, are a very powerful source of course correction in these multiple incarnations, and trying to get it right before we incarnate and come back with our soul group to do it again and try and do it better each time. The life review is where we feel the impact not only of our actions but even of our thoughts on others around us. But the interesting thing about life reviews is that life reviews in general give us two important lessons. One is the boundaries of self are artificial. We're all sharing in the dreaming of the one mind's dream. We're all in this together. And so that sense of separation is very false. And this, of course, is something that comes out in some of the deepest studies of brain, mind, and consciousness today. Things like telepathy, precognition, remote viewing, out-of-body experiences, And then, of course, the whole host of spiritual things like NDEs and shared death experiences are all showing us something very different about the nature of consciousness and the very nature of reality. And so this world is shifting dramatically. And the beautiful thing is that each and every one of us is part of that process. You know, all politics is local, but likewise, all of this transformation, this awakening evolution of consciousness is occurring at the level of each and every sentient being that is asking these questions, seeking these answers, going within to further develop that beautiful relationship with that loving deity, the source of all that is, and coming to have a much richer relationship there by developing that observer. The observer that can see your ego and the petty concerns and anxieties and fears that the ego tries to reject, but can see that for what it is, and to realize that we gain far more by recovering that sense of connection with the divine, that we are all truly one with God, that the prophets were really all the same and had the same message, and it was distorted at different levels by different orthodoxies. But in fact, one thing that was very clear to me as I came back and first started giving talks about this, I was contacted by people, Christian mystics, Kabbalists, Sufis, Islamic mystics, Hindus, Buddhists, meditators of all stripes, telling me how similar my journey was, my story, with so much of what they held dear and true about their mystical traditions. And that should come as no surprise. NDEers bring the very same focus, the very same confluence of understanding of oneness that hinges on compassion, hinges on helping the least, the last, and the lost, and realizing we are all truly in this together. One of the most beautiful lessons of religion over the years has been, do unto others as you would have done unto yourself. And the thinking for this obviously came from prophets who realized we are all truly one. We're all in this together, and it really is about sharing that. It's about a heart resonance. It's about a consciousness that, as much as I had spent all those years at Duke and Harvard and tried to put consciousness in the brain, it was Karen Newell, who I met in November 2011, who really helped me to come realize this is about a heart consciousness. It's about realizing that it's love and connection. And so when I participate in these kind of play shops that we do together, what I actually feel is that, and I promise you, in an NDE setting, it's as rich as it ever gets, and it's that resonance, it's that heart resonance, and you can feel it. And we start feeling that everyone in the audience is resonating together. And we start to live that oneness of connection through heart and love, just as a flock of birds flying together, or as a fish swimming in the sea in a school, all communicating so perfectly. It's because we're all part of that one mind. And dreaming that beautiful dream together is one of growth and of ascendance and of finally reaching the true promise of the human spirit that I think has been greatly diminished by some of the false separatist thinking, not only of Orthodox religions trying to put themselves up on a pedestal compared to others, but also of the ultimate faith-based religion, which is materialist science. And now I'm not putting down science, because I think science is the pathway to truth. But materialist science is an absolute dead end. It has nothing to do with reality. And there's a much deeper and richer science emerging around the understanding consciousness itself, and beginning to acknowledge what Karen and I often refer to as the supreme illusion. I already mentioned, but that's that whole recognition that everything you've ever experienced has been nothing but the inside of your own consciousness. It's a model that we presume represents something out there. Now, the majority of the physics community, in trying to interpret that measurement paradox in quantum physics, would try and explain away the results, or try and explain the results by explaining away consciousness. And the most popular way they do that is something called the many worlds interpretation, which means that every subatomic interaction, every single possible subatomic event unfolds, but and every possible result happens, but each one leads into a new universe. So you have an infinite explosion of possible parallel universes where all possible outcomes exist. And by postulating that, they simply could move away from having to put consciousness in any kind of position. But if you actually turn it around, take metaphysical idealism and realize that consciousness is the thing that exists, and that all of that physical world is simply a projection out of consciousness, something that physicists for a long time have basically known and understood. You know, every bit of it is almost entirely empty space. If you look at an atom, which makes up everything in this world that we see around us, every bit of it made up of atoms. An atom is if you liken an atom, say, take it up to the size of the Notre Dame Cathedral, the mass of it is contained in something the size of a gnat in the middle of the Notre Dame Cathedral. So just about all of what we see around us is completely empty space. And in that nucleus, in that one little gnat of mass in the middle of that Notre Dame Cathedral of the atom, 98% of that mass is actually just the binding energy of the quarks thrown together at the beginning of time. There's almost nothing to any of this. As Sir James Jean said back in the mid-20th century, musing over the mysteries of quantum physics, he said the universe begins to look much more like a great thought than a great machine. We should herald the mind of the governor and creator of this realm. And it's taken the scientific community a long time to come around to recognizing the deepest lessons of quantum physics. And the experiments keep proving over and over again that it's really that weirdness of quantum entanglement and other phenomena that show us that this is all a thought. It's a projection. And the thing that truly exists is consciousness. Each and every one of us has that. And that's why going within has so much power. Because going within, when you realize the brain is not the creator of consciousness, is going out into this universe and joining with the creative force of all that is. And first and foremost, that gives us tremendous power in the living of human lives, in the decisions we can make. As my guardian angel told me on that butterfly wing, you can do no wrong. But we do have choice. And the more we can make choices out of love, compassion, forgiveness, acceptance, and mercy, the more direct is our pathway of ascendance towards oneness with the divine. But we have free will. We can choose otherwise. And all we do if we choose otherwise, if we choose to be greedy or selfish, hand out pain and suffering to others, is we're simply taking a more arduous pathway. Because if we don't make amends for our transgressions in this life, then when we come to that life review, we do. And the interesting thing that I was getting to a few minutes ago is that when you go through that life review, you're experiencing the effect of your choices and actions on behalf of those who are affected by it. The boundaries of self dissolve. We become the other beings. And that's how we learn the lessons. And anything that cannot be resolved in the life review can result in new lessons that need to come in the next lifetime. So Karen often urges me to do a daily review, not just a life review. Don't let all that baggage build up. You know, make amends in this life. Bring that love into this world. Share it with people that you are interacting with now. Share that love. Now, the other thing that's important to point out about life reviews is they also show us our notion of time flow, past, present, to future, is a cleverly wrought illusion. Everything is presented to us as it manifests that stage setting for the unfolding of the drama. And that's a very important point to get, that time flow here is not an absolute. There is what I call deep time, that I mentioned a few minutes ago, which is a much higher ordering of progression of souls and ascendance towards oneness of the divine, which is basically a record of all of our personal dealings in that rich tapestry of multiple incarnations that we can actually access. That's what transpersonal psychology, that whole world, is about, getting to some of these deeper issues and coming to realize that, as Mark mentioned yesterday, these cases of incredible genius, creativity, things like that that seem to be apparent in children with no obvious kind of genetic or nurturing kind of cause, can better be explained in many cases by reincarnation, that we come back to continue a mission. Nobody gets out of here dead. And that is an important point to make. If you're banking on that, and that's for those people who want to go sit on that cloud playing that harp, I'm sorry, that's not the way it works. Life has far more meaning and purpose to it. And that's what we are all living and teaching and learning together here. And with that, I would like to thank the NDE community, thank Ions for having me, and thank God for each and every one of you being here, and for all of us sharing this beautiful awakening of humanity today. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you. Thank you so much. God bless you all. Thank you so much. Thank you.